Welcome to the Arlington Street Church podcast. Founded in 1729, Arlington Street continues today as a gathering place for progressive people of faith in the greater Boston area and beyond. We are located at the corner of Arlington and Boylston Streets, across from the Public Garden in Boston, Massachusetts. Please visit ascboston.org for more information about this historic Unitarian Universalist congregation. Arlington Street Church, gathered in love and service for justice and peace.
We might think of ourselves as thinking beings who feel, but we are actually very much feeling beings who think. This morning I want to talk about malaise and the healing power of community. I want to talk about gathering around the campfire. The World Health Organization defines mental health as a state of well-being in which the individual realizes their abilities, can cope with the normal stresses of life, can work productively and fruitfully, and is able to make a contribution to their community. If you're not always all up to that, you're not alone. Susan Magsman and Ivy Ross, authors of Your Brain on Art, write, "We know how we want to feel. Happy and safe, open-minded, connected, grounded, at ease. But we are flooded all the time by emotions that are complex neurochemical responses to external and internal triggers. Anxiety, loneliness, and toxic stress are on the rise, which also have detrimental effects on physical health. Mental illness is increasing at a faster rate than physical disease. And depression is the leading cause of disability. Globally, nearly 1 billion people struggle with their mental health. A generation of adolescents and young adults is experiencing epidemic levels of mental distress. There are days when some of you have been brought to your knees, like your body and mind have been hijacked and you just can't seem to get out from under that overwhelm. You are not alone. I see it, and I'm sure you see it, this collective malaise, and so many of us are affected by the so-called diseases of despair, drug and alcohol abuse, and suicidality. So I want to say two things about this. First, of course. Kem has a bumper sticker on her van that says, "If you're not outraged, you're not paying attention." Those of you who go to anger over depression are lucky. Depression siren song calls us to languish in bed, but anger has that wild energy behind it. Either way, of course, you're feeling terrible. But second, and this is the point, the problem is not our emotions. Our emotions are useful biological communicators that have evolved over millennia to help us survive. The problem is getting mired in them, getting stuck. Slam poet Adam Schmalholz, known by his stage name InQ, says, "Emotion is energy in motion. Trapped emotion can block you from being present in your life, cut you off from your curiosity and passion. To be well is to be able to summon the resources, to avail ourselves of the resources to navigate through it, to move through the difficult emotions, burn them off, and move on." So hold that thought while we reflect together on what we learned about being together when the pandemic so rudely forced us apart. First, the extroverts freaked out, and the introverts thought they'd been raptured. But then, even the introverts began to feel uneasy. Remember that? Before the second lockdown, I had to have some pretty unvarnished conversations with some of my favorite introverts about potting up, even for a weekly meal shared on Zoom. In one way or another, it was hard on everyone. And not here among us, but out in the world, I am pretty unimpressed with how people have emerged from the enforced isolation. My dream was that all the lights had come up and no one could help but see how we need one another, how important connection and community are to our well-being. But no, instead, so many people came out feeling cheated and mistrusting and angry. We're seeing more and more people treating relationships as transactional, relating to others as a means to their self-centered ends, rather than for understanding and meaning. Civilization is feeling degraded. We can do better. We are doing better. And the saving influence of that better can start with us. It's not complicated. The very simple solution begins with kindness. His Holiness, the 14th Dalai Lama, says, "Be kind whenever possible. It is always possible." Maximin and Ross write, "We are ultra-social creatures who biologically evolved to belong to something greater than ourselves. We need one another, and without strong and lasting connections to family, friends, colleagues, neighbors, without the relationships that we create over a lifetime, we cannot survive, let alone thrive. Be kind and strengthen your bonds to community. Hold on tight." At the close of their lives, evolutionary biologist E.O. Wilson and our beloved Dave McLean were neighbors. Dave, an engineer, was enchanted by Ed's giant mind and insatiable curiosity. Ed is credited with a series of important discoveries, including the determination that ants communicate primarily through the chemical transmission of pheromones. He could talk about anything, and he won the Nobel Prize for it. So, circling back to burning off difficult emotions, I love what E.O. Wilson had to say about campfires. "Humanity," he said, "began with firelight. Our lives as we know them come courtesy of lightning." He says, "Arcs of electricity 6 times hotter than the surface of the sun sparked trees and brush to flames on the African savanna, where early humans captured its magic and carried it with them from place to place. Our prehistoric ancestors learned to make campfires and to cook meat. At night, wood crackled into flame, illuminating the darkness for the first time, offering warmth and protection from predators. So began the lasting human desire to make a circle, stare into the flickering flame, and commune. The pragmatism of the day made way for the mystery and evocative nature of night. As fire fostered new forms of coming together, people sang and danced and told stories, made ceremony, mourned and celebrated, experienced transcendence and communal joy. Researchers now say that participating in these collective experiences, forging social connections in this way, improves cognitive function, lowers stress, and diminishes depression. And through mirror neurons, it allows us to build empathy and understanding with others, to build community. We are hardwired to thrive in community, working together to ensure our collective future. I like to think of us on Sunday mornings as gathered around a metaphorical campfire. And I want to tell you about Peter Fink and his campfires. So a couple of weeks ago, just before 2 o'clock in the morning, Peter stood on a barren mountain plateau near Campo, California, about 300 yards up a rocky incline from the United States-Mexico border wall, passing out blankets to people arriving there under cover of night. There's no National Guard in that remote wilderness, no infrastructure to keep these migrants alive in the extreme terrain and temperatures. While people from four continents, Indians, Brazilians, Georgians, Uzbeks, and Chinese, wait to be taken into custody by US Border Patrol agents and begin the process of gaining asylum in this country, a makeshift camp, a dirt patch under a high voltage tower, features donated water, food, and firewood to help them survive. There are no aid tents or medical volunteers, just Peter Fink. He is 22 years old. Asked by New York Times reporter Emily Baumgartner if he worries that his humanitarian aid might encourage more people to cross into this country unlawfully, he shakes his head. People do not spend their life savings and risk the lives of their children so they can taste these peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. Peter grew up in the Pacific Northwest. He learned to speak Spanish working a summer job picking cherries. In 2020, compelled by the immigration crisis, he volunteered at a Sonoran migrant shelter. At night, he earned an international studies degree online using free Wi-Fi at a local McDonald's. He didn't create this camp, he found it. A local man had noticed campfires burning on the plateau at night, and Peter, who is also a woodland firefighter and avid camper, volunteered to hike up and spend the night to see what was going on. Within hours, over 200 migrants arrived on foot and huddled together against the wind. Peter swung into action, basing his operations in the nearest town of Jacumba Hot Springs, population 857, which is 30 miles away. He rousted up donations of four-person tents and set them up in a neat line of the plateau, cramming 10 people into them, each on a bad night, children and women first. He used plain white paint to label the drawers of old office filing cabinets in four languages and filled them with snacks. And on good nights, these at once desperate and hopeful people all sit together around a campfire, telling their stories and sharing their songs. It is midday when Peter spots a couple making their way slowly through the arid brush far below. The woman is pregnant. He grabs two water bottles and begins his descent, waiting for them at a distance back from the border to avoid all appearances of encouraging them, for which he could be arrested. Once on US soil, the woman lowers herself to the ground. Her husband squats in front of her, taking her face in his hands. Peter approaches them, asking where they're from, San Salvador, when the baby is due, 1 month, and whether they have been extorted for cash by Mexican authorities. They say not. He leads them up to camp using the hand and foot holes he's carved into the incline. And then he turns and sprints back down into the valley. He can see a mother and a little girl in a polka dot pants and a ponytail, obviously lost. He leads them up. They are from Guatemala. The child, 5 years old, believes she is going to Disneyland. And so they trickle in. As night falls, Peter builds the campfire, sanitizes and tidies the tents, and lights garden lights and glow sticks along the path up to camp for those who will arrive by night. He is about to get a little sleep himself when a woman appears alone and collapses into his arms, weeping. She has become separated from her companions. Peter climbs to the highest point on the rocky ledge, cupping his hand around his mouth and shouting in Spanish, "We have water and food. Do not be afraid. Come this way. Welcome to the United States." He waits with the woman, wrapping her in a blanket. "Dios te bendiga," she says. "May God bless you." Soon her lost friends appear. It is time to rest. In a couple of weeks, Peter Fink has to leave for the Northwest, where planting season for sour gum and amaranth is beginning and where he has lined up landscaping and construction jobs. But the camp will remain, maintained and restocked by volunteers. A few days ago, when a group of Colombians was released from Border Patrol custody into the United States, an aid worker heard them discussing an angel who kept them alive and won their hearts, who speaks good Spanish, they say, and who sat and sang at the campfire with them. "Since the beginning of human existence," says E.O. Wilson, "the ways in which we have gathered have changed, but the reasons we come together have not. We are ultra-social creatures who biologically evolved to belong to something greater than ourselves. We need one another. And without strong and lasting connections, without these relationships that we create over a lifetime, we cannot survive, let alone thrive." Along with ants, bees, wasps, and termites, we humans are one of only 19 species on the entire planet that are eusocial, meaning we work together to ensure our collective future. Altruism is essential to build and support community. Group members make sacrifices for the good of the whole. Ed Wilson concludes with this: "Caves used as prehistoric dwellings in Gibraltar and Israel contain evidence of two kinds of hearths. One at the entrance was a kitchen, but a second in the back, in a separated space with a natural vent in the rock, was where people gathered to socialize around a fire." Beloved spiritual companions, humanity began with firelight. Together, may we dance and tell stories, make ceremony, mourn and celebrate. We need one another. May we strengthen our bonds in community and be kind wherever possible. It is always possible. Amen. And now for our benediction, I invite you to put your hands over your heart in namaste. I honor the divine in you. From Elizabeth Alexander, sung by our choir this morning, "What's more, there's fire. Dazzling and improbable, not only in the cores of planets and stars, but also in the hollow where belief begins. Our search for kindling takes us far beyond ourselves. There, we gather truth and mystery. We return in joy to tend the chalice of our hearts. Let us keep this faith, beloveds, and pass it on. The service begins when the service ends. Bless your hearts. I love you. Amen.
Please visit ascboston.org for more information about this historic Unitarian Universalist congregation. Arlington Street Church, gathered in love and service for justice and peace.